Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. Today, I am here with Amy Ippoliti, and we're going to be talking about the art and business of teaching yoga. Really excited to dive into this topic today. You are listening to Creating Wellness from Within, a podcast devoted to helping you live your best life through self-care and wellness. In each episode, we strive to offer you actionable advice and tools to help you on your journey towards greater personal wellness. I am your host, Amy Zellmer. I am editor-in-chief of Midwest Yoga and Life magazine, and I am author of the Chair Yoga Pocket Guide. I am passionate about yoga, wellness, photography, travel, and all things glittery. You can learn more about me at creatingwellnessfromwithin.com. So today's guest is Amy Ippoliti, and her and Taro Smith are co-authors of The Art and Business of Teaching Yoga and co-founders of Vasilifi, formerly 90 Monkeys, an online resource for yoga professionals. Amy teaches on yogainternational.com and has been a presenter at the Omega Institute, Kripalu, as well as Telluride Yoga Festival and the Hunaman Festival. So welcome, Amy. I have to tell you, I think you are my first guest with my name.
Oh, how cool. I was noticing that. It's the Amy show.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to introduce another Amy.
I love that.
Growing up, there was like 10 of us in my class. Oh, and now as an adult, I hardly know any Amy's. It's the oddest thing.
That's amazing. I actually saw someone on the news called Amy Lee, and that's my middle name.
Mm.
So I was like, there's another Amy Lee. Oh my gosh.
And I am Amy Jo. I don't know like if our parents were looking for just real short names at the time or what, but Well, Amy, welcome. I'm really excited. Today's topic gets me excited, and I think it'll get a lot of our listeners excited about the art and business of teaching yoga. And even if you're not a yoga teacher, maybe you're some other professional health and wellness coach, whatever it might be, I have a feeling you're still going to get some little golden nuggets today. So please do continue to listen, even if you're not a yoga instructor. So Amy, where would you like to start it? Where would you like to begin tackling this topic?
Well, gosh, how to begin? I started this process way back, I would say, in the late 90s. When I had become a yoga teacher myself, and then around the turn of the century, 2000, I became a yoga teacher trainer. And at the time, when I got into yoga, it was so fringe in New York City to be a yoga teacher. It was like you were completely out there if that was your profession.
Right.
And on top of it, I was unable to even get classes on my own schedule because there was so little desire for yoga that I couldn't get hired. But then around the late 90s, the world sort of caught on to the beauty and the amazingness of mm-hmm. yoga. And there was a lot of media attention around celebrities who had found yoga, like Madonna and Willem Dafoe and Sting. And I was a young yoga teacher at that point. And when that media attention hit, all of a sudden I went from having a hard time finding classes to teach to being completely inundated and having to say no. I was book solid.
Wow.
And so that's a really different reality for most yoga teachers, what right. I experienced at that time. And it was just the timing. And when that wave kind of started to build, yoga teachers started, well, I would say that teacher training started, and there was like this massive quantity of yoga teachers all of a sudden to fill the demand. Mm-hmm. But then it was really hard to stand out. I was lucky because I kind of rode the wave.
Yeah.
My trainees, the people I had trained, were having a really hard time getting hired anywhere. And that broke my heart because I had worked so hard with them and they had worked so hard to train and to study that to not be able to have a way to offer their services because there was just so much yoga out there and they couldn't get gigs. I was like, we have to do something about this. How do we get them to stand out? How do we get them to flourish as yoga teachers? And I started to study business, marketing, career aspects of being a solo entrepreneur more than I even had studied like yoga philosophy and the Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
It was like, okay, I have to figure this out and crack the code. And so that began the process. And then sometime around, I would say 2010, I created an online course for yoga teachers to work on their career and figure these things out and figure out how to stand out. And that became the book, The Art and Business of Teaching Yoga, which was published in 2016. And now I think we're having a resurgence of looking at this topic because I have a new and revised and expanded edition of the book coming out, or it's come out already. And that revision and expanded edition serves to look at the last, you know, that was like 7 years ago we first published the book, but so much has happened since. So that's sort of kind of a roundabout way of getting to where we are now.
And, you know, talking about just how much has changed since 2016, right? Like, you know, with COVID, I know it brought on a whole new appeal of online, not just yoga classes, but also yoga teacher training online, right? Because during COVID, the Yoga Alliance opened that door, which I think makes it so much more accessible for people, because that's, you know, 200 hours. What is that? 12 weekends, 10 weekends, depends how you teach it. That's a lot, you know, we're doing it online and doing it at your own pace. You can be doing it in the evening. It just opened a whole new door, made it more accessible. So I was a photographer for 20 years. And so I've constantly been a solo entrepreneur as well. And just watching the trends, like, you know, when you first started your studio, I bet you had an ad in the phone book. And you were in New York City, so maybe not in the paper, but like, that's how I used to get my business back in the day in the early 2000s, late 90s. That's how you get clients. And now
snail mail.
Yes. Snail mail, postcards, mailings. Yes. Which is actually making a resurgence because nobody else is doing it. So that actually is becoming effective again, where that kind of dipped down and went away for a long time. So just even the modalities, right? Like having to learn Facebook ads and TikTok and just like all these things that have come along since 2016, even.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the landscape of the yoga world has changed drastically since 2016. And a lot of it was what happened in 2020 with the pandemic. And that forced so many people online. I mean, not so many, like everyone was online, especially those first few months we were all quarantining.
Yeah, there was no in-person.
And it just, the in-person went away. And so the new revised book sort of looks at the kind of like a recap of what actually happened during that time. And there was at first this really like enthusiasm to study online because it was the only option. A lot of folks actually had more time on their hands. So they were starting to see that yoga is more than just the physical. It's more than just like doing your asana class, but that there's also, pranayama or meditation or philosophy lectures. They had all this time. So on the one hand, like yoga kind of blossomed during the pandemic in that way, in that sense of the more esoteric teachings getting like kind of a front page. And then sort of after about a year of that, the attrition from online started to occur because people were getting burnt out on Zoom.
Yeah.
And then the in-person you know, popularity started to gain footing again, and yet there was still some danger with going out. And, you know, to this day, there's still a little bit of insecurity around being in a small room with a bunch of people that aren't wearing masks. So there's still like a...
And doing breath work.
Yeah, like doing breath work. Exactly. So we look at that, you know, what has the landscape, or how has the landscape changed really drastically in 2020, and like bringing us right to where we are now? And to your point, yes, social media is hugely part of how we do business now. And email is never going to go away, but we have a different relationship to email. And I think the other thing that really came to light during the pandemic, partly because people had more time on their hands and partly because of really what's going on in the world, is that there were huge changes in the social landscape. Social justice causes really came to light, and the environmental crisis and emergency that we find ourselves in now came to light as we were pulling way back and had more time to really focus, like, whoa,
yeah,
where are we going to get our food? How do we, like, how are these systems that are, that we've always sort of relied on, they're kind of breaking down. So what are we going to do about that? And I think that we can't escape sort of like reality as yoga teachers. Like, yoga isn't about, at least the yoga that I was reared in, is not about sort of like escaping what's going on in the world. It's actually engaging with it.
Yes.
You go, right, like, how are we going to make a solution, or how are we going to serve in these times? Not yoga's my happy place and, oh, all the students come with me and I'll take you away to this fantasy land where everything is fine. It's more like, let's do the yoga so that we can be better at moving through the world, a world that is changing rapidly, and a world that is in crisis, and a world that's in an emergency on so many levels. And so I really felt like it was time to, we focused on it a little bit in 2016, because that's just who I am, but it's like, okay, now it, where,
yes,
what is that?
It definitely blew up in 2020.
Yeah. Right. Like, what's that intersection of teaching yoga and being a leader, right? And someone who can help sort of shepherd people through this difficult time that we find.
And I think we also need to address, you know, within social justice and just appropriation and how much stuff has been appropriated previously in yoga. And I think, you know, when you know better, you do better. Right. And we're learning, and, you know, I do see some resistance in the yoga world with some of it. But I think, you know, as more and more leaders, as you said, put on their social justice cap, right. And lead in that way, like, you know, like Susanna Barkataki, Michelle Cassandra, Tracy Stanley, you know, they're doing some great work. If you're not following them, make sure you're following them. But as we know better, we do better. And, you know, not taking things away from the roots of yoga, but, at, you know, making, enriching it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know, what are some of the ways you address this within your book? Like, what are some of the steps or the tools that you offer your readers?
Well, so in the, if you look at sort of what we added to the book, the book itself was really an essential guide to, how to have a career, a successful career as a yoga teacher. And we look at all the different ways, that you can build a business in yoga, whether that's like, how do you get classes? How do you sort of like deal with your finances? How do you create a brand? Like, all that stuff we did in 2016. So it's a real thorough guide to that. And so what we added in the revision was a lot on the online piece. Like if you are going to bring your yoga online or you're going to have an online component, what are the nuts and bolts of that? So like sort of the infrastructure you want to have in place in order to offer digital yoga, but then also how you teach digital yoga well. So how do you convey your classes and your teachings in this new format, which might be new to you? It might, you know, you might be a real old hat at it at this point, but even if you are a old hat at offering online yoga, how do you do it at your best? How do you convey the teachings of yoga through an online medium when traditionally it's always been done 3D, you know, like in the classroom? Right. So we give a lot of tips from our experience of over a decade in the online space of what really creates engagement with online yoga, where people are actually finishing the videos, because it's really easy to not be accountable to finishing your practice when you can just hit stop and no one knows that you hit stop on the video player. Whereas if you go to a yoga class, if you walk out the door, you're seen by 15 other people watching you leave the class. So you're not going to do that. You're probably going to stick around and just, you know, stick around till the end, even through resistance, right? So we talk about like, how do you keep engaging your students so that they finish their videos, they stick with it, go into great detail on effective teaching. And then we have a whole section in the new revision that's on the karma yoga. So the yoga of action, the yoga of seva, right? The yoga of giving back. Like, how do we step up as leaders in the yoga world to, again, shepherd our students through these difficult times, whether it's, you know, human rights being chipped away at, whether it's, you know, which is like, everyone has that underlying discomfort, right? That there's this division going on in the world, that there are human rights being degraded, that there is social injustice, right? That's something that's like an underlying anxiety. And it's not something we want to just sort of sweep under the rug. So, and then of course, the looming environmental emergency we find ourselves in, this climate emergency we find ourselves in, is also an underlying anxiety. They're even calling it climate anxiety now. Yoga teachers are in a position, as you know, to help, right? To help ease anxiety, to help create a sense of ease in the face of things that make us really anxious. Yoga is also a method by which we can create relief in our communities to folks who are struggling. Yoga is a way that we build community and we rally community and mutual aid in the face of systems that are breaking down, where, you know, there may not be food for our community. There already isn't food in many communities. We call those food deserts or food apartheid. And so, because yoga has always been a community-based practice where we practice in community, we as yoga teachers have this, you know, we really have this platform, if you will, to build better community in the face of these things. And community is going to be the number one thing that we need to survive, really. And community, also, as we established in 2016, is the one reason people come back over and over and over again to yoga. Like every yoga studio that does well knows this, that the more community they build, whether that be introducing students to one another or hosting, you know, post yoga class gatherings where there's social human interaction, that is going to create a situation where people come back over and over again. But it also turns out it's what we're going to need for our survival. And so we look at also philosophically how many schools of yoga have created a scenario where yoga is how we go to a spiritual place. Like we go to like a happy place or a sanctuary where we don't have to think about the real world and what's going on and the troubles. And there's a real consciousness around that in the yoga world that I'm going to say, unfortunately, is a thing. We address spiritual bypassing is basically right. What that is. Yep. And it's not that anyone is bad for doing that. They got that from teachings that came over from more yes. aesthetical schools yes. of yoga, where it's about renouncing, right? Renounce the world and find spirit, right? But there are many schools of yoga that are all about spirit and the world are two things. And it's a paradox that we're both in a spiritual world and we're also in this really like real world. And how do we live with both? Let's embrace the paradox. And so if we go with that sort of, or those sensibilities or those schools of yoga, we really have a responsibility as a yoga teacher and as a leader to keep it real, you know, and, yeah. and be like, hey, there was a fire in our neighborhood. Like I sat from my living room, it was December, I believe it was December 2021, if I'm not mistaken. I was sitting in my living room watching the hillside across the valley, like lighting up house after house in Louisville, Colorado, lighting up. I mean, talk about traumatic to see this entire neighborhood that you know people are I know folks there, my friends are there, right. to see the homes just lighting up on the hill. And thousands of homes were burned down right, you know, from my view. Pets perished in the homes. People died. I mean, it's like, if you go and teach a yoga class the next day and you just brush over that, it's not cool. Right. You know, so like, so we talk about like, okay, what happens when you have an environmental, I want to call it like a disaster.
Yeah.
happen in your neighborhood, in your community, how do you handle that the next day when everybody comes to class? You know, and it's like, how do you keep it positive, right? Like while still acknowledging the pain, the grief, the loss, right? So we go into a lot of scenarios of how you might theme a class around something like a fire. You know, so for me, it was like, okay, this thing happened, this fire happened, sit with how you're feeling, sit with where you're at. If you're in grief, if you're in loss, if you're in anger, if you're in sadness, feel that. Okay. And now like, one of the things that I was so moved by during the fire is that so-and-so started a collection of winter coats and you sort of highlight people in the community that really stepped up to serve and to be helpful, right? And so then you can focus on the virtue of kindness, compassion, service, right? Like that disaster creates virtues that you can then focus on. And guess what? There are Sanskrit words for compassion, for kindness, for, you know, right? And so then that's how you bring the yoga philosophy into a tragic situation. You could end that class going, what are you committing to mitigate climate, right? The climate emergency. What are you doing to mitigate? Here's what I'm doing. I started a garden. I'm composting. I am volunteering, you know, at a farm that is bringing food to people who are in need, you know, et cetera. What are you doing? Take a moment to contemplate what you might do, right? So that's how we can be leaders when we are faced with so much difficulty and so much loss, right? So that's just yeah. one example, but you know, it's almost like daily we have to do this because there's some yeah. kind of thing happening everywhere, you know, a police shooting, a flood, God, it's like the list is endless.
I know.
Hurricanes, yeah, right.
Every day there's something that, yeah, needs,
yeah, needs there's to be so addressed. Much hope. There's so much hope. And we get out of despair and despondency when we take action. And that's what karma yoga is. The root of the word karma is kra. It means to do or to act, right? And I think karma yoga is one of the three paths of yoga that's laid out in the Bhagavad Gita: karma yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga. So, you know, bhakti is very devotional. It's lovely. Jnana yoga is super important, that we have knowledge, that we have a process of knowledge, that we understand facts, right? But karma yoga is like, okay, what are you going to do about it? Now that you know this stuff, now that you're feeling your connection to the divine, what are you going to do? Right. And so to ignore that path of yoga, right, is spiritually bypassing, and it doesn't serve. So
yeah,
I'm all about
that. And I feel like our climate right now is so divisive, and it's very polarized right mm-hmm. now in our country. And yoga can help us come together, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if everybody practiced yoga, I think the world would be a happier place.
100%.
Right? People need yoga in their life. But also, if we, you know, like I've had people say politics don't belong in yoga, politics don't belong in your magazine. And it's like, I beg to differ with you, because, you know, we need climate change policies. We need to preserve our planet. We need policing changes, right, in our country. Clearly, it's not working the way it is. The system's a little broken. So it's like, we do need to talk about these things, and they can be very uncomfortable. And inevitably, you're going to piss somebody off, right? And all you can do is just keep space for that person and hope that maybe your words touched them, right? And maybe if not immediately, maybe down the road, it might resonate with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a whole section actually in the new book, on politics and yoga. And in it, I share, you know, like anytime I, especially on Facebook, not so much Instagram, mm-hmm. but on Facebook, if I say anything about politics, like even if it's like, this candidate's great, you know, like, look at what they're doing. And
you're gonna piss off 50%.
Well, someone's gonna write, like, you know, stay on your yoga mat, or like, you know, just really rude comments, like stick to yoga, blah, blah, blah. And that just, it infuriates me, because politics are how we care for one another. Politics are how we decide as a governance, as a community, on like how we want to live. And we might argue mm-hmm. about how what those methods are. But if we can actually see politics as a way we care for one another, and how we create systems that care for one another and enhance how we live, right? That's a kind of a good thing. That's a good thing.
Politics, I mean, ahimsa.
And we are the government. Guess what?
Right.
We the people. We are the government.
We the people.
In
it
a democratic society.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our house up on the hill.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a whole section in the book on really like normalizing that yoga and politics are connected.
Yeah.
That was my hope in the book, was like, let's normalize this. Let's not attack one another when we make a political statement online. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not do that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk, let's debate. I mean, yoga scholars debated tons of things.
Right.
They it's debated like, you know, they debated like philosophy. Like, well, what do you think about that? Well, are you asking the right questions? You know, there's always a debate. So this notion that debating is bad in yoga is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it has no historical.
And ahimsa and inclusivity, you know, yoga is all about inclusivity. And, you know, it saddens me when, I was part of a book fair, and there was drag queens reading at happy hour. And so you can imagine some of the negative comments I got. and how that was inappropriate for the magazine to mention drag queens. And I'm like, we're inclusive, you know, bring right. on the drag queens. We right. embrace them.
Right. We live in a diverse world. Like, yes. have you looked at nature? Have you looked yes. at the Amazon rainforest and seen how many different species exist? How many different microbes exist? There's room for everyone and every yeah, kind
we,
of
We thing. Welcome drag queens. We love drag queens. We embrace them. And it just, you know, and then it just spirals sometimes and it's challenging. And, you know, in that instance, I felt I needed to address it because if I didn't say anything, I was choosing to ignore it. I mean, that was a choice, right? Mm-hmm. To not respond. And so I felt that I had to respond because that might give somebody else permission to respond to something like that in the future, right? Where if I ignored mm-hmm. it, like I said, that's a choice to ignore. So I chose to address it.
Good for you. And,
you know, she ended up blocking me and that's fine. Right. That was her choice. But yeah.
I just started the documentary on Taylor Swift.
Miss America.
Yeah, I'm not a major Taylor Swift fan, but I
wasn't either until I watched that.
Yeah, I was just intrigued by her shift into saying something like, from like trying to be the good girl and then yep. shifting into speaking out. And I haven't gotten to the part where she's actually starts speaking out, but I'm excited to see the rest of it.
Yeah. Cause she started country. Right. And right. you know, she was told don't bring politics into it. It'll ruin your career. And mm-hmm. then she shifted to pop, I guess. Is that what she's considered? Mm-hmm. And she grew up, right? She was very young when she started. And she's like, I have to address this. Like, I can't, like, I have a platform. I need to use it. And that's because I was never a Swift fan. I was like, what? Like, I didn't dislike her. But when right. I watched Miss Americana, totally changed my attitude of her. And I was like, okay, yeah, she's cool.
Because she's telling the truth.
We need more Swifts in this world.
Yeah. I like that you said she grew up in the industry, started mm-hmm. super young. Yeah. I think yoga needs to grow up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like we need to grow up and grow into that maturity of being okay with speaking out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and what are we taught in yoga? Like discomfort is okay and to sit in our discomfort.
Yeah.
And that's usually interpreted as physical, but it also includes
oh yeah,
the other avenues of discomfort.
Yeah. So, keeping it real.
Yeah. So Amy, I could talk to you all day, but we are just about out of time. So I want to make sure that we mention your website. And so it is amyapoliti.com. And of course, wherever you're listening, we have a clickable link in the show notes. And I'm assuming we can purchase your book there. But what else can we find on your website?
Well, so my website is amyapoliti.com. So I'll spell that out. Amy, A-M-Y. Ipoliti, IPPOLITI.com. So it's my, you know, it's my workshop schedule. I have a blog on there, kind of the usual links to upcoming events. You can see, read about my full bio, the environmental work I do. And then I also have a website called Veslify.com, and that's spelled V-E-S-S. ELIFY.com. And that is a website specifically for yoga teachers. So you can find online courses and you can find out about the book as well. So yeah, that used to be 90 Monkeys. We changed the name to Veslify because Veslify is like, it's a word I made up for when you're a yoga teacher and you kind of get out of your own way and you start to channel like a vessel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you want to Veslify. So that's how you remember the name. And that
I love that.
Teachers and yeah, online courses and all kinds of things. So yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And also I do want to point out, that we do an excerpt from your book in the fall winter issue. And so be sure to check that out. That's also on our blog. And yeah, thank you for being here. I appreciate you taking the time. And just thank you for being an advocate of this earth.
Oh, thank you so much. And may, if you're a yoga teacher or wellnesspreneur listening, just wishing you all the best and wishing that you flourish in your career.
Thank you, Amy. And thank you everyone for listening. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please consider leaving a 5-star review wherever it is that you're listening to help others on their wellness journey discover the podcast. And be sure to head to MidwestYogaLife.com and join our email list to stay in the know of upcoming events, the yoga conference, and so much more. Have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you in the next episode.